Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey, glad to have you with us as we're here every Wednesday and repeat it during the week. I'm going to have a very good show today. We're going to be talking about the new Stock Act. That's the one that requires members of Congress and senior federal officials, including about 28,000 career people, to list their stocks and bonds and their personal information. And I guess what's next is DNA, maybe, and hair samples. But we'll be talking about that with Bill Bransford. He's Senior Executive Association's General Counsel. And then at 10:30, we're going to switch over and speak with Stephen Losey and Stephen Watkins from the Federal Times and see what they're working on and bring us up to speed. So glad to be with us. And remember, we are online, so you can listen online and tell a friend about it. We're also archived on our webpage, so you can listen anytime. And this may be one of those memorable shows that you'll want to hear again. Bill Bransford, are you with us?
I am, Mike.
Hey, Bill, thank you for being with us. And listen, I won't take up too much time with the introduction, but can you do sort of briefly what the Stock Act is and the ramifications of it for career civil servants?
Well, what it does is it amends the Ethics in Government Act, which has been around for a while and has required high-level federal employees, including career senior executives, to file these reports. They're called OGE Form 278, and it discloses their personal financial information, their assets, their debts, and those of their spouses and minor children. And it goes to their ethics official, and it's reviewed and scrutinized to make sure that the that there's no conflicts of interest in what the senior executive is doing on a day-to-day basis on the job. And it's also publicly available, but with some significant restrictions under the prior laws. If someone wanted to see this 278, they had to file a written request, say who they were working for, and also a statement that they were aware of restrictions. And there were restrictions on the use of this data. It could not be used for commercial purposes, to get a credit rating, to try to sell products, that kind of thing. And fact that this requirement was there actually, I think, made most senior executives who were subject to this filing requirement somewhat comfortable that they could go ahead and publicly release this information because there would be a limited distribution. What happened is the Stock Act, which came about because of a 60 Minutes story in the fall, which highlighted allegations of congressmen who were using inside information on legislation they were working on to make purchases on the stock market, which apparently were allegations that were later disproven. But nonetheless, the ball got rolling, the legislation received enormous bipartisan support without ever going to a committee. No one had a chance to look at it. No one looked at the unintended consequences. And it passed both houses of Congress by overwhelming majorities in both the House and the Senate, without regard to whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. The president signed it. Everyone said, great. The only problem is it was ignored that this statute would have a significant impact on career federal employees in two primary respects. One is the information, which was somewhat public but protected, is now going to be posted on the Internet for anyone to see. And the second requirement is that any time someone trades in their stock portfolio, other than in a mutual fund that is widely traded and has varied holdings, other than that, they have to report changes in their stock portfolio within 30 days of when they occur, and post them on the Internet for everyone to see. So it seems that number one, there's going to be a big intrusion of privacy, personal privacy, that did not exist before, and exactly what the impact of that is yet to be seen. But a lot of very worried senior executives are out there, worried about identity theft. They're worried about criminals getting hold of this information. Some of them are worried about any embarrassment that their financial information might pose for them as they try to do their job, serving the government, operating major programs. And So that's the unknown. And, of course, the 30-day reporting requirement is a burden that carries with it a $200 fine that a lot of people, you know, as they work on their jobs and day-to-day life, you know, they may overlook this reporting requirement. It may be a very frequently violated rule.
Well, and number two on this thing, you were talking about the privacy is not there anymore. What's the other downside to this?
Well, the two big downsides that the Senior Executives Association is worried about is the burdensomeness of the reporting requirement, but most important, we're worried about the invasion of privacy. Posting personal assets of not only the senior executive but also the spouse and minor children for the whole world to see.
Well, I know you have a lot of experience with the Internal Revenue Service. And I've talked to IRS people, and IRS to some extent protects its people from this sort of disclosure, doesn't it?
The Privacy Act certainly has historically provided a level of protection, but I think the Stock Act is an exception to the Privacy Act for SESers and other senior people at the IRS, and so this information will be posted for IRS employees. Now, what the impact of that is on tax collection is, I think, speculative, and it's probably going to vary from executive to executive. We've heard from our members, and I think the real issue here is how many GS-15s who are not subject to this reporting requirement are going to want to come into the SES if they have to disclose this financial information, if they are aware of and realize the impact of that. And some people might not care, but other people might care a whole lot. It depends on your assets, depends on your debt level. There are a number of factors and concerns. So there's an impediment there to coming into the SES, which is already a difficult thing to do. And then also in the future, because this applies to political appointees, will there be people who turn down political appointments because they don't want to have to go through this reporting requirement, especially since it's so public with being posted on the Internet?
I was looking at the government executive story on this, and in their comments section, the very thing you mentioned, a man or a woman wrote in and said, I'm a GS-15, and under the Stock Act, there is no way I will take a promotion to the SES, yeah, considering the hours and the differential in pay and whatnot.
And I think we, as Senior Executives Association, received a similar email from somebody who said that believed that she would have been a good senior executive and would not apply for SES and would retire as a GS-15 Step 10, which is a shame. And I've heard from senior executives who want to get out of the SES because they don't want to continue to have the reporting requirement. So it's an interesting issue, seeing the reaction. We've heard, you know, the original Ethics in Government Act excluded the intelligence community from the public filing requirement, and that carries over to the Stock Act. But we have a situation, and there may be more than one that we know of, where we have a senior executive in the intelligence community who's excluded from the reporting requirement, who's married to a senior executive who's not in the intelligence community, who's subject to the reporting requirement, and that senior executive in the non-intelligence community is required to report the assets of the spouse. So, it seems self-defeating. Whether, the Office of Government Ethics, which is going to regulate the Stock Act and has not issued guidance on exactly how this public filing is going to work as of yet, may come up with some ways of dealing with these anomalies and dealing with what appears to be a significant intrusion of privacy. I mean, there's some language in the statute that makes the information, says the information has to be completely available, but then there's some other language that seems to have a login requirement, and I'm not sure what the Office of Government Ethics is going to do with that and how it might interpret it. But there's maybe some hope in the way it's implemented that it won't be quite as intrusive of privacy as it appears to be.
We need to take a short break here. We'll be back in a minute to talk with Bill Brensford of the Senior Executives Association.
Do you you suffer from both chronic gout and have a history of heart disease? If you suffer from both chronic gout and heart disease, local doctors need your help with a research study testing an investigational medication. This research study needs men at least 50 and women at least 55 who suffer chronic gout flare-ups and have experienced a heart attack, been hospitalized for unstable angina, suffered a stroke, or have had complications due to diabetes. If you qualify to participate in this research study, you will receive all study-related procedures at no cost and may be compensated for time and travel. If you have chronic gout and a history of heart disease, call 301-327-4854 or log on to goutstudynow.com to learn more. That number again is 301-327-4854. That's 301-327-4854. Or log on to goutstudynow.com.
Join host Michael Keegan for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Leaders Speak, a conversation on leadership and public service. What makes an effective leader? Why pursue a career in public service? Over a dozen past and current government executives shared their extended reflection on the next Business of Government Hour.
Vacation time is right around the corner. Why worry about the safety of your home while you're away?
I had Ackerman Security install a system 2 years ago. Now I leave for vacations with total peace of mind. I know I can trust an Ackerman Certified Monitoring Center. They don't use a third-party monitoring company like most companies, and it's only $18.95 a month.
Call today and get 2 free months of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring. 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com.
Here's the Honorable Anish Chopra during Health IT, a policy change agent, a panel sponsored by HIMSS.
Roughly 5% of the patients in America account for about half the total costs. So the question is, which 5%? This requires analysis. Heritage Health turned to a platform called Kaggle to invite data scientists to help develop algorithms to better predict which patients are most likely to get sick.
Listen to more of this program on demand at federalnewsradio.com.
HIMSS, the global leader in health IT education, presents an exclusive invitation for healthcare policy leaders, IT decision makers, and providers. Go to govhealthitconference.com to register for the Government Health IT Conference and Exhibition on June 11th and 12th. This year's conference will focus on how to adapt IT processes alongside shifting public policy to ensure the delivery of efficient quality care. Register at govhealthitconference.com and share successes, challenges, and best practices with decision makers from government, health IT, and the healthcare provider communities.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources at myvillagegreen.com. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey. I'm talking with Bill Bransford. He is the General Counsel for the Senior Executives Association, and we're talking about the implications of the Stock Act. That's the one that requires members of Congress to divulge their financial holdings, and it's now been extended to, Bill, is it about 28,000 federal workers?
Well, I heard it's something between 10,000 and 28,000. No one really knows. Anybody who's a GS employee is excluded.
Okay.
Anyone who salary is not in the GS system and who earns as a part of their base pay, 120% of GS-15 Step 1, which would include many of the SL and ST employees, the high-level officials in the banking agencies, the Securities and Exchange Commission. There's a group of scientists at HHS who are paid under a separate pay system who would be covered, medical people at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Exactly how many, I don't know, but I've heard it could be as high as 28,000.
So it's salary as much as the job itself.
Except for GS employees. All GS employees are excluded specifically.
Okay, all right.
So, but you have SIS in the intelligence community, but they're excluded from the public reporting requirement. They meet the income threshold. You have the senior foreign service at the State Department, who are included. You have all these, there's a large group of scientists who are higher paid, who are in the classified in the ST level. They're included, unless they make a very low salary, which they can under their pay system, but most of them don't. So those are all the ones that are required to post. And of course, agency ethics officials are very busy making sure that all of their people who are required to file these forms are identified and aware of their obligations.
Well, in the past, and there have been reporting requirements, as you said, but they were much more private. The agency had access, and people with need to know could get it.
Well, it wasn't so much a need to know; it was a desire to know.
Okay.
And you had to say what you were looking for, so you had to be aware, and then you had to identify yourself. So
you would know if I was looking for.
You'd be able to have a trail, and there was a prohibition on the improper use, and there still is apparently, under the Stock Act, a prohibition on the improper use. The difference is under the old law, there was a trail, and you could figure out who had the information. The Attorney General had a civil enforcement authority for improper use of the information. Still does, but how are you going to find these people if anybody can go to the website and just get the information? How are you going to figure out who had it or how they got it?
Could be some hacker in Ukraine looking at it or
that's
something.
Exactly right. So I unless someone can figure out a way to make that more traceable, it appears that the statute does away with that.
Well, now, this requirement in the 60 Minutes thing originally centered on Congress, and Congress, I guess, broadened it to include these people.
That's right. The original legislation did not include the career employees. It included members of Congress and some of their staffers, and then it was broadened to include political appointees and then broadened again to include higher-paid federal employees. There was such strong support, and it was very difficult for anyone on the Hill to speak out against ethics reform. That's what this was all about, and it's difficult now. I mean, the Senior Executives Association is doing what it can. We've written a number of letters. We've met with people on the Hill. We've reached out to. There's a couple of other organizations that are similarly concerned about this. We've reached out to them. We've had talks with people within the administration, the administration is highly supportive of the Stock Act, so those are difficult conversations to have, but we're having them nonetheless. And of course, we're hearing from our members every day. We hear from people about how upset they are and how concerned they are when August 31st comes and this information gets posted on websites. What is it going to mean for them personally? Nosy neighbors, troublesome subordinates, identity theft pros, criminal elements, terrorists, and I think the scenario is going to differ for every senior executive, but there's some exposure there.
Well, it's interesting. I've talked to a number of people from the Internal Revenue Service who over the years say they've been subject to harassment from neighbors, from dissatisfied customers, everything from sending extra pizzas to their house, a la Jerry Seinfeld, to filing frivolous lawsuits against them and whatnot, simply because of their jobs.
Well, that's right. Somebody who has a job who... and a lot of assets is going to be viewed by a potential plaintiff as a source of someone who's not judgment proof. Now the Department of Justice is going to represent that person, but who wants to have to deal with a lawsuit, even if it's going to get thrown out of court?
Yeah. Well, now, we can understand that given the low opinion ratings with Congress, it's down at the bottom in public opinion polls, and the fact that we have an election coming up and a very contentious and divided, politically divided Congress and whatnot. Do you think that they did this, that they included these career federal executives in it because they think they really needed to be in it, or is this a case of misery loves company? If we go down, we're going to take you guys with us.
Um, I, I, I don't know the answer to that question because I don't think that the actual reasons were placed into the record, or at least if they were, I'm not aware of it. But I think there's certainly an element of misery loves company and an element of if members of Congress have to do this, why not include those high-level federal officials who are who influence policy decisions, who are involved in exercising government discretion. And that's a nicer way of expressing their motivation. But in any event, it's something that happened. There's another requirement in that's been downplayed, which I think it's very reportable. It's very doable, but it's a very serious new requirement. Anybody who's looking for a new job, who's covered by the Stock Act, these higher paid employees, and they're looking start to negotiate for a new job, they have to tell their employer within 3 days of when that job search begins in earnest, and also recuse themselves from anything to do with a job search. The recusal requirement has always been in place, but this notification of your employer within 3 days, I think a lot of people are going to overlook that, and it's a very significant issue, and it went into effect immediately upon President Obama signing the legislation, that the job reporting requirement.
So does that mean if you're my boss and I'm looking for another job, I must tell you within 3 days that I'm hunting?
Yes, you must report it to your agency.
So that could kind of tip your hand there.
Within 3 days, yes, exactly. And, of course, people have not necessarily wanted to tell their employer they're looking for a job because they may not necessarily have one. They may not come through.
Right.
So that's a different.
Well, normally, even in these tough times, when federal workers are attacked or appears to be some injustice or something unfair, there's a small band of members of Congress in the House and the Senate that come to the defense of federal employees and say, "Well."
And we've met with them, some of them, about the Stock Act. And I don't want to indicate who they are, and I will tell you that they are very sympathetic about the concern of SEA's members. The emails and letters that we've received, and they recognize that it's a legitimate concern and that the Stock Act overreaches. But they also recognize the political reality of changing this in an election year when the administration is highly supportive of the law, and it passed by both houses. It passed both houses of Congress with bipartisan support in an overwhelming manner.
Well, I think that says volumes right there. If these people who normally are sympathetic to you in public and are currently sympathetic to you in private don't want to go public because we're getting near the election.
And it isn't necessarily that they won't want to go public. It's just that they recognize the political reality that the likelihood of getting that small group of people to expand their influence to others is going to be an uphill battle. I mean, SEA is still trying to do this, and we're trying to educate as many people as we can. We're trying to keep on top of what's happening with the Office of Government Ethics as it issues guidance and regulations on the Stock Act, so our members know what's expected of them at a minimum. So this is something that we're continuing, an issue we're continuing to work, and we'll see how it turns out.
Did anybody who was arguing for this in the Congress ever allege that under the old rules, the government wasn't catching crooks, wasn't catching the bad guys?
Well, Senior Executives Association wrote a letter while the legislation was pending before it passed, arguing that the current system works quite well. The government ethics officials, the designated agency ethics officials in each agency actually do scrutinize these forms. They actually do look for conflicts of interest and that kind of thing, and that the whole legislation was unnecessary. And I know that Senator Lieberman, when the legislation was pending in the Senate, was quite concerned about expanding the scope of coverage to include all the government employees and thought that it was too broad. But nonetheless, the legislation.
Okay, we got to wrap up here. But starting August 31st, unless something changes, I will be able to find out what my next door neighbor.
If your next door neighbor is a senior executive or other high paid government.
All right. Thank you so much, Bill Branch, for being
with
us. Thanks. We're going to take a short break here, and I'll be back talking with Steve Watkins, Steve Losey from the Federal Times, to see what they're working on.
My journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
This week's Experts in Health topic is Summer Skin Care for Kids, featuring Dr. Brent Thibodeau, Chief of Pediatrics in Northern Virginia with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group and practices at the Kaiser Permanente Reston Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Dr. Thibodeau. Did you know that a handful of serious sunburns can increase your child's future risk of skin cancer? Here are a few tips to properly care for your child's skin. Apply sunscreen with an SPF, sun protection factor, of 30 or higher. Check label for broad spectrum, which means it blocks both UVA and UVB light. Dress your child in protective clothing such as long-sleeve shirt, pants, a wide-brimmed hat, and sunglasses. Take extra precautions near water and sand, as both reflect the damaging rays of the sun, which can increase your child's risk of sunburn.
Dr. Thibodeau was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian Magazine. To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's Experts in Health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Here at Best Buy, we have expanded our selection of HD Radio car stereo receivers. New HD Radio car stereos are in store and offer you the best in digital entertainment and information. More music from local HD2, HD3 radio stations, iPhone, iPod control, digital traffic, iTunes tagging, and more. Best Buy has the leading brands, Alpine, Pioneer, Kenwood, JVC. Lots to choose from, with prices as low as $120. Here at Best Buy, we recommend HD Radio technology.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by LearningTree International.
LearningTree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality, instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by LearningTree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Many companies say they have a hard time finding top-notch engineers to drive innovation. Now at least one company has an app for that. Rather than just send job seekers to a website, Rich Whitney, employment brand manager at diesel engine maker Cummins, decided to
set up a customized job feed and have those jobs that match their skills come directly to them.
Cummins' mobile app, perhaps a first of its kind, not only provides an easy search of available jobs, but things like a 3D interactive on the latest engines.
Making diesel technology and mechanical engineering overall hopefully seem a little bit cooler and a little bit more interesting to all ages.
Even grade school students.
That is where students get interested in science and math and how engineering is applied.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Delighted to have you with us. We've got two fun guests, as always. Steve Watkins, who's editor of the Federal Times. Stephen Losey, who's a senior writer. And they had a little spare time this week. Normally we do this by phone, but they're delighted to have them in studio. And we may even eat lunch afterwards, gentlemen, if it works out. Hey, first place, what are you guys working on?
Sure. Well, quite a bit, obviously, is going on. We have a story in our paper on GSA and all the things they're doing at the agency to try to right the ship. following the big scandal that hit last month. And we had a couple reporters at their latest conference last week, the Expo in San Antonio, and that was quite a show of conspicuous austerity. So a fun story that we had on the website and in the paper about showing the box lunches and the ethics handouts that were given to all the employees and such. So it's really changed the complete tone of the GSA conference experience. Steve is working on a great story that we have on the website this morning about bonuses that four senior executives at GSA received who were responsible for planning the 2010 conference, and he can talk more about that. In addition, Steve also has a little bit of news about the Roth option that they're rolling out at TSP and how that's getting started. Yesterday, we just saw some news, sorry, not yesterday, but late Friday, some news out of OMB with the new guidance for the 2014 budget. So all the agencies are basically instructed to cut their spending by 5% below what the administration has already essentially estimated or projected for all the agencies in their 2013 budget submission. So agencies are going to have to get used to an even lower expectation for the following 2014 fiscal year. And for the IT section, that's even a bigger cut, 10% cut. And then there's an issue going on with the Defense Department where 130 congressmen in March sent a letter to the Defense Department, Leon Panetta, the secretary, asking him to essentially lift the caps on civilian staffing at the department and to basically to allow for more civilian employees to be hired to take on various work that the department is doing, do more insourcing, and to limit contract spending. That's been a long-standing source of friction between certainly the unions and DOD. Congress weighed in on it, and we heard last week from the Defense Department that, in fact, they are taking some steps that were essentially outlined in the 2012 authorization bill that basically they do have a cap on civilian staffing at 2010 levels, but they have exceptions to hire more people. They are preparing guidance that they're about to release any day now, I guess, that would allow them to immediately insource any work that they are contracting out that is, quote, inherently governmental. That's been a big source of friction. And they're imposing caps on how much they can spend on contracting for services that are similar to inherently governmental work.
I was talking with a couple of, to name drop, generals and admirals the other day, and this was before the 5% cut had been ordered, but they were talking about the dangers of across-the-board cuts in any operation, but particularly in defense, and they said they were trying to figure out a way to get the establishment to cut what they called the back room, you know, leave the point of the spear sharp, don't cut the warfighters, but cut the back room. Maybe cut it 10% or cut it 15%. Is that doable under these guidelines?
It is. It's basically cuts like that will be left up to the department to figure out how to do it. And DOD is on record and across the department as saying they do want to cut their overhead costs. They know that they spend way too much on overhead, on things they don't need, on buildings they don't need. One of the big issues that our reporter Andy Medici has been covering lately is this fight over another BRAC round or two mm-hmm. BRAC rounds. That's one big area that the Defense Department sees some savings in. Congress, it looks like, isn't going to allow them to do that. But that is the kind of thing that, in fact, these civilian workforce caps that are in place at the Defense Department is basically a recognition that by the department that they need to reduce that overhead, and one way they're doing that is through these civilian caps.
You have two front page stories in your hard copy this week about the GSA scandal, and I love the one, GSA's new conference theme, conspicuous austerity. I mean, there you go, and then it shows a picture of a bag of Doritos and some things. And these are not the conferences we remember from old. Now, you had Andy Medici and Sarah Chacko there, so you had two reporters.
That's right.
And normally you would have none.
Right.
Right.
Well, no. We've been sending reporters.
Have you?
Every
okay.
Year, yeah.
Okay, because it is interesting. But you know, one of the things that talking about before the show, and I was talking with some other people, the GSA situation may pale in comparison to what's going on with the Secret Service. And, you know, we had our story today in Federal News Radio. You guys have had a story. The Washington Post has a front page story. And this one has legs, as we say in the business. This is going to go on and may expand to other agencies. But the GSA thing, I think the reason it strikes such a note is, what was it, a friend of mine once, he transferred from the newspaper business to a university to teach, and he said they had these horrible battles over who got the bigger Rolodex and whose window faced east, and somebody had a fan and the others didn't. And he said the reason the fights were so vicious is the stakes are so small. And I think in the case of GSA, this is stuff that the John Q. Public, ordinary man and woman, can get their teeth into a $30 bowl of shrimp or that kind of thing. And although the money, $800,000 for three people, I mean, that's a lot of money, but in one respect, it's chump change. And Enron, that wouldn't fund their company picnic. But it's the kind of thing that people can get a handle on. You agree?
Oh, it is certainly. As you say, it $820,000 in federal by federal standards is hardly noticeable, but it's really the principle and the symbolism of the whole thing. Here you've got an agency, and particularly GSA, which really does have as its mission the notion of saving the government money, of being the efficiency agent for the federal government, and here they are essentially, you know, hooping it up in Las Vegas. I think that would strike anybody, and it certainly has struck everybody as pretty alarming. Steve's story is particularly interesting because basically he's found that in light of all that, a lot of these executives who were planning all this, in fact, received some pretty hefty bonuses.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we already knew that Jeff Neely, who is the Region 9 commissioner, who was the one who said when they were planning this conference, make it over the top. We already knew that he was he had received a $9,000 plus bonus after GSA, top GSA officials knew that there was something wrong with this conference and had been alerted to preliminary findings from the IG. Well, our colleagues over at Channel 9, which is also another Gannett media organization, they FOIA'd some, requested some data from GSA on senior executive service bonuses, and we found out that Jeff Neely was not the only senior official involved in the Western Regions Conference who received bonuses. The three other region commissioners who like Neely were also placed on administrative leave received bonuses of between $9,100 and $11,690. Now, all four, the region 7, 8, 9, and 10 commissioners, they all were involved in planning it. Three of these four commissioners attended the conference, and like I said, they are all placed on leave. And that's not all. David Foley, who was the Public Building Service Deputy Commissioner, who, again, was placed on leave, he also received a $9,530 bonus. Now, these bonuses came months after, as I said, with Mr. Neely, these bonuses came months after GSA officials had been alerted that something was not quite kosher with this Western Regions Conference, yet the bonuses went ahead anyway. I reached out to Joanne Emerson's office. She is the congresswoman who's in charge of the subcommittee that oversees GSA funding. And by the way, let me just interject that she is really gunning to cut GSA's budget next year, largely as a result of this conference. But Joanne Emerson issued a statement that said these bonuses are a slap in the face, and she said that she's going to be looking slap in the face of taxpayers, I should say, and that she's going to be looking further into them. So yeah, the news nuggets just kind of keep dribbling out about this GSA conference.
Well, the GSA, too, it's part of it, it has interior decorators. It has things that other federal agencies doesn't. And if there's any place that you would go to say, how do we throw a good party, the State Department, obviously, it's protocol people. Nobody can touch them. But GSA is another place where this became part of the culture, didn't it?
It seems that way. What came out after this the news broke about the Western Regions Conference is that these regional commissioners had been kind of trying to one-up each other. Each conference kind of got a little bit more elaborate. It started out kind of low-key, and then it got a little bigger, until suddenly you're having mind readers and clowns and parody sketches with GSA officials, and it kind of got a little out of control, it appears.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing about the conference from last week.
Excuse me,
yeah,
I've got to cut into you. Take a short break here, and we'll be right back.
A civilian employee of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State, you may be eligible for term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America. Term life insurance helps provide security for your family in case something happens to you. It's money to pay your mortgage or your children's college expenses, or help ensure your spouse can retire in comfort. GEBA's group life plan offers affordable rates with coverage amounts up to $600,000. Civilian employees of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State. Don't let these exclusive benefits pass you by. Start planning today and get peace of mind for your family and protection for their future. Visit GEBA.com/termlife to learn more or to download an enrollment form. That's GEBA.com/termlife. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 260 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, what does your company do, John? My company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations that have programs for conformity assessment, accreditation, standards, and policy management. Is your agency responsible for conformity assessment? If so, then please visit our website, armaturecorp.com. We can help.
Many factors affect job satisfaction. Hours, teammates, and opportunity can all make or break an experience. That's why it was an impressive achievement when 100% of employees surveyed recently reported they were proud to work for Acuity Inc. With a 766% growth rate and recognition as a best place to work, Acuity is attracting talented, passionate professionals and keeping them happy. Learn more. Visit myacuity.com/careers.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, we've proudly served the U.S. Armed Forces community with low-cost life insurance and unique survivor assistance services. We always focus on our members' best interests. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for all military personnel and policies with no war or aviation clauses. Get a free life insurance quote today at AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
I'm Linda Carr, President and CEO of Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, AAST, a joint venture of small businesses dedicated to providing the federal government with exceptional services under the GSA Alliance Small Business Contract. Our goal is to team with small, medium, and large IT companies to deliver needed services to the federal government. Please contact us at AdvancedAlliant.com for more information on potential Alliance Small Business teaming opportunities. That's AdvancedAlliant.com.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
As IT becomes more ingrained in agency missions, the acquisition process will need to become more responsive in meeting the needs of the technology workforce, especially since ongoing trends suggest 2012 will be a watershed year for reform. Join AFSEA Bethesda on May 24th at the Bethesda North Marriott as Chief Acquisition Officers and Senior Procurement Executives discuss how agencies and industry can work together to improve technology acquisition. Register today at AFSEABethesda.org/MayBreakfast.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Mike Causey, welcome back to your turn, and we've got a couple minutes left here, talking with Steve Watkins, editor of the Federal Times, Stephen Losi, a senior writer, and been covering the waterfront. Just back briefly to GSA, this ninth region, the western region, didn't they kind of have a reputation among GSA as being the wild bunch?
Yeah, they did, and you know, maybe it's a function that they're the furthest removed from headquarters, perhaps proximity-wise. But yeah, and I think, you know, we're going to end up seeing at the end of this, I think, some real restructuring going on at GSA. So it's certainly not going to look like the same agency when all is said and done that it is today.
Do you think it could disappear?
I think there's long odds against that, but certainly there's rumbling, which we haven't heard for a number of years. We used to hear some of those debates back in the 90s, early 90s, about, you know, whether GSA was really needed in government. I think the mission of GSA is, for the most part, pretty well understood. It just hasn't been well executed, at least in this situation. But So there's a lot that GSA can do and needs to do, and they are doing to some extent in terms of saving money, finding efficiencies, bulk purchasing, all that kind of stuff. But they do need certainly more accountability. The regional offices have, for the most part, operated very independently from headquarters, and I think we will, in the end, see that change quite a bit. It's already started to change. But I think we'll see a number of shifts like that. Dan Tangerlini, the acting administrator, has already talked about doing some of that stuff.
Well, I have, like a lot of people, a love-hate relationship with social media, you know, Facebook and all that kind of thing. But it's some of the stuff that we reported, you reported, the Washington Post reported, some of these emails from people regarding this conference. It's like, we don't have this power forever. Let's use it. Let's do it while we can. I mean, in reading it in out of context or in context makes it look so bad. I mean, there has to be some kind of reform, mind reform in there?
Yeah, I think so. I think, and I think ultimately that's what Tangerlini is trying to do, is change the culture, the mindset of the GSA employee and culture. And we saw that at the conference last week. He had, for one thing, they usually have like an ice cream social the first day of the conference at these, and I've been to a number of the expos. That was canceled. I mean, it went down to, you know, the tablecloths and, you know, so forth. Everyone got ethics handouts. They had placards at every single lunch table reminding employees to remember to include the $16 box lunch into their expense voucher and so forth.
You
so,
have a picture of that in your current issue
exactly.
Of the paper. I see something on the front page. Federal bonuses dip. So it's the escalator is going down all over.
That's right. You know, the Asbury Park Press, another one of our sister publications, posts salary data for federal employees every year. This year, the data came out, and they revealed that the federal government paid about $439 million in bonuses to employees last year. That represents a $43 million drop from the previous year, and it all shakes out to about 0.4% of the payroll for surveyed employees. Now, when I look at these numbers, I think a couple of things. It makes me think of last summer when OPM and OMB issued a memo telling agencies to start reining in bonuses. They said by the end of 2012, SES bonuses should be no more than 5% of their payroll, and all other employees' bonuses should be no more than 1% of their payroll. Now, and they said that agencies should start reining them in beginning in 2011. Now, what these numbers show is that many agencies, it appears, have already met those goals, and it also suggests that agencies were successful at bringing their bonuses a little bit down from where they were.
Well, you know, the members of the public and irate congressmen go ballistic when they hear about bonuses, particularly in a situation like the GSA desert storm operation. But some of the people that I find are most critical of bonuses are federal workers themselves. And I've heard, and I'm sure you have too, people who say, it's a buddy system. People, they're used to reward friends. It has nothing to do with accomplishment. And others say that bonuses appear in the last few years of somebody's service. It's a sort of a payoff, old Joe for doing a good job. But they have very little correlation with actual performance itself. And some people have questioned the need for any kind of bonus system in government. They say people are paid well. Many places in the private sector do not have bonus systems. What do you think?
I think that's right. I think that there sometimes is a perspective that only the friends of management get it. And the state of performance management in the federal government has been pretty bad for a long time. And it's something that the Office of Personnel Management is trying to have agencies get more of a handle on so we can so managers can tell whether somebody is actually performing well enough to merit those step increases, those bonuses, those promotions, things like that.
What's the big issue coming up next week?
Well, the GSA, of course, is going to be a big story for us, following up on the bonuses for the GSA executives. And the Postal Service, we're still awaiting their actual announcement in terms for buyouts. We know they're going to be offering them, but we haven't seen the details yet. We know they're going to split. They're going to be $15,000 buyouts at the Postal Service to basically pare down by something like 5,000 employees by September. We expect that those will be parceled out into two payments, one this year and one next. And they're going to be shutting down 43 processing plants as part of that. So there's a lot more detail from the Postal Service we're waiting on. Same thing with the postmasters. You know, a few weeks earlier, they announced that they were going to offer early outs and buyouts for postmasters. I've already gotten calls from some postmasters who were just really upset, saying, you know, this is going to end my life as I know it, being forced out. You know, I love my job, and I'm not going to be able to send my kids to college and that kind of thing. So this is really going to hit a lot of people pretty hard.
Good deal. Thank you, Steve Washington. Steve Losey from the Federal Times. We'll talk to you next week. Everybody have a good week. Remember, we are archived on our homepage. If you want to hear this again, you can do it at your leisure. Take care. Have a good week.